Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a torrid day in Texas. I'm at Unity Fort Worth. It's very, very hot, but that's okay. We keep our own inner climate of cool wherever we go, so that's the power we have. Today we focus on a fascinating new book. It's entitled Return of the Divine Sophia, and it's subtitled Healing the Earth Through the Lost Wisdom Teachings of Jesus, Isis, and Mary Magdalene. And it's an in-depth study of the divine feminine as creator, archetype, and loving divine energy throughout the universe. Her loss and now her current rediscovery and reimagining, because she's been lost in patriarchy for thousands of years. The author, Tricia McCannon, is a renowned clairvoyant. She's a teacher, a mystical symbologist. I think that's cool. You know, if you could be anything, I'd like to be a mystical symbologist. This sounds good. She is trained in many of the great mystery schools. She leads workshops, and she teaches worldwide. Her earlier books are Dialogues with the Angel, with the Angels, and Jesus, the explosive story of the 30 lost years and the ancient mystery religions. Tricia is a director of the Phoenix Fire Lodge Mystery School, and it's a joy to welcome her as today's guest. So welcome, Tricia.
Thank you so much, and it's wonderful to hear from you guys in Texas. It's been pretty hot over there, I take it.
Yes, you know, Texas tends to get hot, doesn't it, in the summer, and
We've been following you on the news. I mean, you guys have vacillated between flash floods and enormous heat. So at least you're getting some, you know, rain in those reservoirs. So it's really a pleasure to speak with you, John Paul, and also the Unity Church. I just adore the Unity Church. We have two wonderful chapters here in Atlanta, and I've actually taught a class, about an eight-week class at one of them. But I love this.
Lovely. Yeah.
I love what they stand for. They're just a wonderful force for good in the world.
And of course, what you're teaching in your books and in your own life is very much in line with the Unity teachings, you know, because we talk a lot about unity itself, our oneness. And I love the fact that, you know, the circle of completeness is a theme that goes all the way through your book. And the integration of male and female energies, which is part of God and part of us, is part of that completeness. And if we only emphasize one side of the sky, if you like, we're missing out. And it's lovely to see this rediscovering and reimagining of the divine Sophia, I think, in the last several years, you know, and you can't keep the divine feminine down, can you? Because it's a reality of the universe. So it can be hidden, but it can never be lost, really. So I'm glad you wrote a book about it. And you it's an interesting book, isn't it? It's a long book. It's like 480 pages or something. And it threads in and out of overlapping themes, which I love about it. And, of course, some of my favorite ideas are in here about the feminine. I got to tell you that for my 60th birthday a few years ago, I wanted an image of the divine feminine, and it was a toss up between Durga, the goddess in a fierce form, and Annapurna, the goddess as the giver of food and abundance, the cornucopia idea. And I asked Andrew Harvey actually, and he said, go for Annapurna, because she's so needed in the world today. We've got too much aggression. Get that. So I got this beautiful, it's like 3 feet tall image made out of mango wood. And she's got a big bowl and she's pouring out rice to the world. So it's a symbol of that provision. But, that's a deeply moving thing for me. And because it's not just an image, is it? It's not just a statue. It's a symbol of the givingness of the divine throughout the universe.
You are indeed right. And, in my mystery school, we study many of the faces of both the divine feminine and masculine as they have come down to us from, let us say, the higher realms and taken expression in the physical world, the planet Earth. And I love Durga because Durga has both. If you remember her story, she was really created at a time of great threat where the darkness was taking over the earth, and the Rakshana that was Rakshasha, who was the dark force, had gotten a blessing that he could not be killed by any gods or any goddesses or any gods and any humans. And so when they turned to the goddesses, of course they were all about love and kindness and healing and forgiveness. But, that wasn't going to take this dark forest out. So all the gods and all the goddesses gave their energy to create Durga. So she has, the lotus blossom of enlightenment. She has the bell of awakening. She has the scimitar or the sword that cuts through the bullshit for the truth. She has the arrow that pierces, the heart. She has the mace to defend the righteous and so forth. So she's got all the beautiful things. She twirls the galaxy and brings it into creation with her hands. And so in my mystery school many, many years ago, some of my students decided we should create a bumper sticker, like how there are bumper stickers that says, "What would Jesus do?" Which, of course, is a great question. This is, "What would Durga do? Would she greet it with love and compassion and forgiveness? Would she gather it to her bosom and love it into wholeness? Or would she, slice through the illusion and give you the power within yourself, the courage to defeat it?" So I love Durga. She's great. But I'm not so familiar with the other aspect.
Where's
the rice down?
Yeah, it's an aspect of poverty, which, of course, is, another aspect of Durga. They're all one, really, out there. There is only one energy, or one goddess, just expressing in different forms, if you like. God
exactly.
Is one.
Exactly, and Parvati is wonderful. I have a painting of her in my meditation room where she's holding the cosmic boys club of Brahm the creator and Vishnu the preserver and Shiva the transformer in her hands. So you're absolutely right. They're as she was known in the Egyptian teachings as Isis, or the I Am principle of the divine feminine, she of 10,000 names and 10,000 faces. And as you say, they all ultimately resolve back to one, just like with the divine masculine principle. Ultimately, all the expressions resolve back to one. And then those two, the divine father and mother of creation, ultimately resolve back to the one behind it all.
Right. And I think the thing about this for us in everyday lives is that, on any given day, we may need a certain form that's more important. If we're going through a tough time and we need resilience and we need energy and power, then Durga can be, just what we can focus on. But if we're feeling like we need nurturing and care being cared for, You know, poverty or one of the other forms can be useful to us. And I think it's the same with Jesus. Jesus can be the, you know, the great warrior, if you like, the one that stood up against the Pharisees and bested them in arguments, you know, and almost got angry in the temple there. That's one form. And then there's the shepherd, you know, the tender, caring side. So depending on where we are, you know, we've got a form of the divine that's just right there for us. And I think that's wonderful, isn't it? That's why we have so many forms, because there's so many different aspects of what we have need for any given day.
Yeah, and there are many aspects, of course. If you think about it as the one that creates the two, the divine father and mother, and then it is that polarity that is, of course, really, you could call it truth or power for the masculine and love or wisdom for the feminine. But, of course, because they're aspects of the one, they can't really separate, so they're joined. And so the sacred geometry of that has always been the two circles with the overlapping that creates the Visakha Pisces, which is the doorway through which spirit world moves into the world of matter. And that's, of course, why our eyes are shaped like that and why seeds are shaped like that, or why the yoni for a woman for the birth canal, or the doorway at the end of a phallus, a man's phallus, where the seed of life comes out, is shaped like that. It's really the place where spirit moves into the worlds of matter and allowing us to actually be here. And that's why, of course, they call the eyes the window to the soul, because you can see the spirit that's inhabiting the physical being when you look into the eyes. So, you know, those beings, those initial beings of creation, are really intrinsic to all of creation. And I don't talk about them a lot in the Sophia book, but I do talk about them some as the Council of Nine, or the nine primordial waveform energies that create, maintain, and sustain and interpenetrate the universe. And we're not unfamiliar with them if we actually think about it. We have the great solar lord, the light of the world, the Christ energy, which is the sun principle. We have the daughter principle, which is the Shekinah, or the waveform. This is why the water patterns and the wind patterns and the heartbeat and the brain waves, everything moves in this sine wave. She's the Holy Spirit, or the breath of God, that is the carrier of the light and sound from the higher dimensions that allow these physical worlds to come into being. And then, of course, we have beings like Metatron, who most people think is an archangel. I'm sure he can appear as an archangel, but he's really at a higher level than the angels. He's the shaper of all form, all sacred form. And what is form? It's the configuration of electrons and protons and neutrons in a particular crystalline, you know, a form, waveform. So, you know, then you have the nine orders of the angels. And this next book that I'm writing actually is about the descent of the soul from the angelic realms and how we, you know, begin so connected to the one, hearing the music of the spheres, knowing where to go, what to do, how to serve, before we have an ego. But then, of course, eventually we come down into the worlds of the fifth dimension, where we get a mental body and an ego, and then eventually we choose to come into the third or the fourth dimension, where we begin to experience levels of amnesia, and we believe that we're separate from the divine, which, of course, is an illusion, since the divine resides within every living thing. But, you know, this gives us the opportunity to experience free will. And when we come down here, of course, we have to do our very best to try to wake up inside the dream and remember who we are. And as we can see, you know, there have been eras in history where we have had bright spots of enormous awakening. Philosophers and sages and mystics, scientists have, you know, tried to pull back the veil. And this is, of course, what was taught in the great spiritual mystery schools, was the eternal nature of the God spark within us all. But one of the things that has happened in our more recent history of the last 2,000 years or even 4,000 years is that, you know, the masculine dominant patriarchy energy wound up kind of eclipsing the balance. And, you know, we have a positive masculine polarity and a negative masculine. We have a positive feminine and we have a negative feminine. And when the masculine negative side becomes dominating and abusive and it gives no honor or respect to the feminine, then the feminine winds up going over to the negative feminine polarity where she becomes, you know, passive-aggressive, or she becomes manipulative. And, of course, neither one of those negative polarities is really what we want on this planet on either side. So, you know, this book is ultimately about the discovery of a hidden history of the planet Earth, that basically God was worshipped as the Divine Mother for almost the first 200,000 years. It's really only been in the last probably 4,000 years, 6,000 years, that then it became the Divine Father and Mother, and then it became the Divine Father and Mother, Daughter and Son, and then someplace along the way, the patriarchy, about 2,500 years ago, you know, destroyed the Divine Mother, destroyed the Divine Son and the Divine Daughter, and sort of said, you know, I've got the reins of power and I'm keeping them for myself. And so, you know, this is part of what I think has been out of balance in the world, and is in the process of coming back into balance today with people like yourself that are obviously embodying a very beautiful, balanced expression of the divine masculine and encouraging other men and women to embrace both sides of their nature.
Right, well put. And, you know, the good news is this happened mostly in the West, didn't it, with the great tradition, you know, Judo, Christian, and Muslim traditions seem to have gone into this very masculine-oriented view of God. Because I think the Hindus, obviously, we just referenced many of the Hindu goddesses, you know, that's been a long tradition that was not cut off. And in Buddhism, too, we see the feminine, and in African religions, Native American. So it's just in these cultures of the West. And unfortunately, these have been the dominant cultures of the last 2,000-3,000 years, whether it be the Roman Empire or the British Empire, and now America itself, you know, they've sort of spread this patriarchy around. But I agree with you; it's just waiting to be discovered. Talk about passive aggressive. I think Mother Nature, you know, Mother Earth, becomes a little aggressive when we exploit and control her, or try to do so. And I think that's why we have such strange weather patterns and things, because, you know, you can't tip the balance without something happening, right? And Mother Earth will redress that balance, and often in a way that is quite frightening to us, because, you know, you can't mess around with this stuff. These forces are way more powerful than our human agencies, yes, and need to be respected as such.
Yeah, you're very right. And of course we've lost a lot of this ancient wisdom. For example, the ancients taught that time is not linear, that it's circular, and that we go through, just like we can observe every single year, we have a spring, a summer, a fall, a winter, and then it comes back around. There are larger expressions of the same cycling in time, and it's kind of like a spiral. We don't exactly repeat where we've been before, but we come around and face the same energies. And of course the question is, where are we on the spiral and what are we going to do about it? So
yeah, you know, hold that thought, because we've got to go to the break, but I think that's a fascinating subject. Let's talk about that when we come back, this idea of the spiral, of the cyclic nature of things, of the holy circle. I'm with Tricia McCannon, and we're talking about her book Return of the Divine Sophia. Excuse me, folks. And we'll be back after these messages from Unity.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Hello, listeners. Did you know we've gone mobile?
That's right. Your favorite Unity online radio programs are available on your mobile device. Now you can take us with you wherever you go. Using apps from Live 365 or Stitcher, you can listen to Unity online radio live or on demand. To learn more, visit www.unity.fm and click on mobile listening.
World as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to the show. And I'm with Tricia McCannon. We're talking about her new book, Return of the Divine Sophia, and how we can heal the earth through the lost wisdom teachings of Jesus, Isis, and Mary Magdalene, and the idea of this cycle or unfoldment. My wife doesn't believe in time, and I can't agree with her. There is no such thing as time. If there is, it's a relative concept that human beings create. But we're actually in this infinite matrix, and we move around in it, and it seems like it's sequential, but it's much more subtle than that, I think. And the circle is the best way, I think, of explaining this, isn't it? The Native Americans use the circle, of course. The mandala idea is the circle. The various days throughout the year and the points through the moon cycle, etc., speak to this cyclic understanding. But there's something about the circle that is, it's complete in and of itself, right? Even though we're going through the parts and processes of it, it's part of a whole. And wherever we are, we're on that whole. And I think it's a very potent symbol for our lives, I think.
I totally agree with you. You know, the ancients believed that just like we have these four seasons every year here, that there were four basic seasons in terms of evolution. And then, of course, they would repeat. And they call them yugas or ages, the golden, the silver, the bronze, and the iron age. And what they say is that, you know, as you can imagine, there's in the golden age, we're far more awake. We're far more aware of our own divinity and our connection with the source. In the silver age, we begin to fall a little more asleep. In the bronze age, we become, you know, it's very much about rational thought, kind of like scientific thought, but if you can't see it, if you can't prove it with the physical senses, maybe it's not real. And then there's the Dark Age or the Kali Yuga or the Iron Age where we fall into ignorance and superstition. And the ancients actually teach that, you know, there are cycles within cycles. So we go through those four ages even within the Golden Age cycle or within the Silver or the Bronze. And so some cultures believe that we fell into the Iron Age about 5,000 years ago. But even within that, you know, we had the dark of the dark during the Dark Ages where, you know, books were being burned, only 3% of the population could even read. And then, of course, during the time of the Renaissance, about 500 years ago, through science, actually, we begin to pull out into more of a Bronze Age consciousness, a rational, you know, if you can prove it scientifically, maybe it's real. And, of course, we've been in that a long time, and now we're sort of moving more, at least parts of the population, into a silver-based intuitive consciousness where people talk about prayer work and healing and channeling divine energies through themselves and being in touch with spirit and doing, you know, automatic writing or being a channel in your painting work or doing the work like the John of God is doing where spiritual beings without bodies are working as spirit doctors through him. So, you know, although a lot of the world is still very much in the rational Bronze Age consciousness within the Kali Yuga, other parts of the world are really moving into more of an intuitive knowing and
yes.
discovering spiritual gifts. And, you know, ultimately, you know, who knows if this will take a couple thousand years, few thousand years, but ultimately what we're meant to do, of course, is to return to a place where we're all aware that that divine spark is within us and that what we do to the animals, what we do to the planet, we actually are doing to ourselves. And that's one of the biggest things, I think, about that dark age, is that when you look at what's happened in the greed aspect of the negative patriarchy, you have people who believe, basically, that we're an aggressive species, we'll never change, war is inevitable, we don't know how to create anything else, it just continues to repeat. When, in fact, the archaeology shows us that until about 4,000 B.C., there was no evidence of war on this planet, that there were enormous agricultural communities, they used weapons only for hunting, that the men and women ruled in balance with each other, that the line of succession was passed through the mother queen or the high priestess queen, and her daughter was the next in line because everyone could, you know, and then she would choose a wise hero or heroine. So the husband or the brother would wind up ruling beside her, and he had his own power, he had his own abilities, his own responsibilities, and so did she. But, you know, there wasn't the kind of obsession that we've had with war and death and violence. And of course, this is back to that circle of life when we understand we're immortal souls. We're born, we're in earth school, we have an experience here for whatever it is, 50, 60, 80, 100 years, and then we pass into the back into the realms of light where we can get a very clear perspective on things, and we heal and decide what we want to do next, and then eventually we return. And when we know that that cycle of life and death and rebirth exists, we're no longer obsessed with death, we're no longer obsessed with violence, because we understand that the consequences of what we do in each lifetime are cumulative, and they either retard us or they advance us on the path.
Right, and I think you're probably right about war. You know, I think a civilization created war, and it seems like an oxymoron, doesn't it? But, you know, once we became city-states and once we had the accumulation of wealth and power, then, you know, you begin to want to protect that, and you protect it from a threat, et cetera, and then you can create an army which does that work for you, et cetera. And before you know where you are, you've got this whole system based on, you know, protection of your economic power and wealth. And that's what we've been seeing throughout the history since then. And it's hard to shift that paradigm. You know, do you agree, though, that, you know, like in 2001, A Space Odyssey, you know, those early hominids, they were playing around, and one of them picked up a jawbone and crashed it down on the head of an animal, and then he crashed it down on a head of a person next to him and discovered, oh, my goodness, I've got the power to kill. You know, it probably goes way back, but it wasn't systematized, was it, until we had the organizing power of quote, civilization. So double-edged sword, it gave us so many advantages. But then it also created, aggression, a systematized, institutionalized aggression, if you like.
Well, it's very challenging, you know, because as long as we're in what the masters or sages have always called the lower worlds, and let me see if I can take a moment to explain that. And again, this is part of what I'm going to be addressing in this next book I'm writing, You know, as a clairvoyant, I've read for over 6,000 people around the world. And when I first started doing readings 30 years ago, you know, I was only going back 5,000 years. And then I made a leap to where I was going back, you know, 9,000 or 20,000 or 50,000. And I found myself in completely different civilizations like Atlantis and Lemuria. And sometimes I actually saw my clients coming in on spaceships. And I would be like, what? You know, hello. And so I found myself tracking those souls up to other planetary systems. And eventually I began to ask, well, where was the soul before that and before that? And as I gained more and more ability through my own connection with Source, I, over a period of many years, I was eventually able to track the soul to what I would call the Genesis Matrix. And that is the discovery, to my complete astonishment, that all of us actually emerge from those angelic kingdoms, that we were completely connected at one time. And then the question for me became, well, wait a minute, you know, what the heck happened? You know, how do we fall into such amnesia and forgetfulness? And so, you know, what I began to do was track the soul from worlds that were beyond duality down through the different dimensional planes to eventually arrive in the third dimension. And I began to discover the mechanisms through which we fall into the illusion of separation. But as long as we are in these, let us say, multidimensional threshold worlds between the highest spiritual kingdoms and where we are today, we have polarity in place. We have up and down and light and dark and negative and positive. And we have all the shades of gray in between, which gives us lots of opportunity for free will and for choice. And, of course, we can choose whatever we want. We can choose to go into darkness, but then there are repercussions for that. We can choose to go into addiction, but then there's pain and suffering that comes as a result. We can choose anything we want to, but eventually, you know, the whole idea is that we wake up inside the dream and we begin to consciously align ourselves with love and light and unity, you know, unity.
Right.
Unity.
Exactly.
And when we do that, you know, we begin to see the divine in all plants and trees and animals and within other people, and we're able to hopefully speak to that higher place to remind those that are still wrestling with those shadows, which are really ultimately, you know, opportunities for lessons, opportunities for us to set priorities based on happiness and joy and alignment, or to choose to spend whatever amount of lifetimes going away from the truth of who we are. And that's, of course, what I think you and me and many, many of the light workers that are on this planet are working for today. And the sad news is that I think that there are people in place, in power, that are so invested with the short-sightedness of greed and profits that they, you know, they're doing fracking, which is destroying the water tables. They are getting rid of old timber forest, which is destroying the oxygen level on the planet. They are setting up nuclear power plants, which if we have a pole shift, like it does appear we're going to be having, like we had in Fukushima, then we have nuclear radiation that will basically destroy our ability to even live on this planet. And so, to me, this is the real, this is some of the biggest dangers facing us today, is that this heavy-handed, short-sighted, you know, self-oriented negative aspect has, you know, which is, you know, how many people are actually invested in that? I mean, maybe it's only 5 or 10% of the population. Now, another 60% of the population may work for companies or corporations that are employing them. But the truth is, those people are just simply trying to make enough money to pay their mortgage payment and survive. And they'd be just as happy, if not happier, working for energy systems that are not polluting the planet and not destroying us. So it's up to those 5 or 10% to turn, you know, the systems around and say, look, you know, gas, oil, coal, you know, we've been doing a lot of polluting with this. There are systems like Nikola Tesla's discovery of the electromagnetic energy field that exists all over the planet, radiated by the planet. We can tap into those fields and have, you know, fossil-free energy systems that don't pollute anything. So it's really up to us, the 60 or 80 or 90% of us, to become aware enough to apply pressure to say, you know, don't burn down the forest. Don't do clear cutting. You know, don't, you know, destroy the wolves. Don't destroy the owls. Get rid of the nuclear power plants that, when we have a pole shift, could basically completely toxify the planet for everybody. And this is where the real danger of that negative patriarchal, you know, vibe that we've been dealing with winds up affecting everybody in a way that we can't come back from.
Right. And, of course, you know, we may be doing more good in America than other countries, even though we've got fracking and we've got things that we don't like. When you turn to the economies that are emerging or have emerged, you know, like China, India, Brazil, you know, you see incredible pollution. I read the other day that I think 13 of the most polluted cities in the world are in India, and now they're saying New Delhi is the most polluted city in the world, you know. And it, because of economic growth again, you know, because they're moving, they're shifting to a new way of doing business, but it comes with all, just as it did in 19th century America, it came with great pollution and destruction. And, you know, it seems like we haven't learned to do something in a different way. We're still chasing that old paradigm. You know, I am an optimist, though, because I feel like it's always been this way. On any given day, I can be gold, silver, bronze, or iron. You know, that as long as I'm aware that there is more than the iron. And I think that's the tragedy, is that we when we buy into a particular system, we think, well, that's it. There's nothing else. We have to remember that it's all interpenetrated, isn't it? And that the more people that can open to the silver and gold, then the shift will happen. And that's what you're about, and what Unity is about, is educating people to the fact we live in a world of possibility. We're not limited by the old paradigms. They can shift and change. And in fact, you know, like you said, if BP or some of the other multinational corporations, you know, decided to shift to renewables instead of fossil fuels, you know, overnight it'd be something dramatic would happen, because with their power and influence and money, you know, they could make big changes. So it's up to us all to say to them, hey, listen, you know, there's another way here. It's quite viable. You can still have your money, but it's going to be better for Mother Earth.
You're so absolutely right. And, you know, when you look at what Jesus and Mary Magdalene were teaching, and I talk about this in my book, you know, as you know, the Return of the Divine Sophia, it starts off as a shamanic journey where, you know, I've come from a very traditional Christian background. I'm in Atlanta. My older sister is a fundamentalist. She's married to a preacher, for heaven's sakes. And they're a fundamentalist couple. And they're good people, moral people, but, you know, people with kind of limited vision and fear-based, for sure, and all into judgment and blame. And for me, because I've been a clairvoyant since I was little, I could see fairies, I could see divas, I could see angelic beings. So I knew that it was a much bigger world than what I was being taught in the more traditional churches. And so I wound up sort of in this book. It starts when I'm about 27, and I actually have a dream that I've gone back to school for my master's degree at a college, and I wake up and there's this strange writing, symbol language on the walls, and I try to remember it and I fall back asleep. And when I wake up, I go to the library to see if I can find some references to the one symbol I could remember, which was a circle with the dot at the center. And while I was there, the student assistant comes and gets me in the library and says, there's a phone call for you at the front desk. And as you know, if you've read this part, I wound up going and answering the phone, and this woman's voice says, you know, we've called to tell you that your dreams are real. And
yes,
I'm like, what? And then I say, well, who is this? And she says, we're from the priestesses of Isis, and that's all we're permitted to tell you at this time. And then she hung up the phone. And then I woke up, and it was a dream within a dream with two messages, the symbol, the hermetic symbol, and the priestesses of Isis. And
very powerful. And then everything changed. Tell us more about that after the break, because it is a pivotal point in your life, isn't it? It shifted everything. Let's go to the break. I'm with Tricia McCannon. We're talking about her book, Return of the Divine Sophia. And we'll be back after these messages from Unity.
Hello, listeners. Did you know we've gone mobile? That's right. Your favorite Unity online radio programs are available on your mobile device. Now you can take us with you wherever you go. Using apps from Live365 or Stitcher, you can listen to Unity Online Radio live or on demand. To learn more, visit Unity Online Radio and click on Mobile Listening.
Pop culture is defined by the Oxford Dictionary as modern popular culture transmitted via mass media and aimed particularly at younger people. But can it be meaningful? Spiritual even? The hosts of Pop Conscious think it can be, and that it can be fun to explore too. Milena Don and Stacey Macris Ross will be your amateur cultural anthropologists examining pop culture and spirituality every Monday at 2 p.m. Central on Pop Conscious on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to the show. I'm with Tricia McCannon, and we're talking about her book, Return of the Divine Sophia. And she was talking about her serendipitous meeting with Shasta, her teacher. And this is a hugely important part of the book and of the shift in life for Tricia. And you can read more about it. But for me, it was, whenever we say yes to the universe, the universe then says a resounding yes back to us, and things happen. And it works at all different levels. You know, you could say, well, how did that happen? That can't be just a coincidence. But it's not, is it? When we're ready, things open for us, right?
Indeed. And, what happened for me after that whole experience with the dream was about 2 months later, I actually had gone to lunch and there was a line. So I went down to this beautiful gift store called Illumina. And I went in and I was looking at this Egyptian statue, and this woman behind the counter said, "Oh, are you interested in Egyptian things?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I've been dreaming of the priestesses of Isis." And she said, "Oh, tell me your dreams." And I then realized, that it would probably be way too complicated for me to explain my dreams. But I said, "Well, I'm not sure you'd even understand them because I'm not sure I do." And she said, "Try me. I'm a high initiate in the Fellowship of Isis." And I turned around, and this was, in fact, the woman who was to become my shamanic or spiritual teacher. Her name is Shasta, and she lives here in Atlantis. She's still alive. And so then, of course, we pick up the story where she invites me to go and see her. And the place that she invites me to is her home, which sits over this enormous multi-acred vortex where people have been doing prayer work for probably, as she said, about 10,000 years. And it's where two blind springs or underwater channels crossed, basically creating like a grid system of great power. And so she, and then there was a male keeper of the guardian, a guardian of the garden, of this beautiful garden, with all these alcoves to the divine feminine, Mary and Mary Magdalene and Lakshmi and Kuan Yin and Sekhmet and many, many aspects of the Divine Mother. And so, of course, I spent the day with her, and some of the things she said just completely shifted my world. And it was very clear to me that my guides wanted me to begin to study with her. But as I say in the book, I was kind of a scaredy cat because I'd come out of this very traditional, you know, Christian upbringing. And even though I knew there was a bigger picture involved, I was not sure where this was going to lead me. So it was about 5 years of my own self-growth before enough events lined up to where it became very, very clear that it was time. And so then I began to go to circles. So the book, The Return of the Divine Sophia, goes back and forth between shamanic teachings in these inner circles of mystery and initiation. And Shasta was trained in the Egyptian teachings, the Native American twisted hair tradition, who are a particular tradition that claim to know the history of the planet, the secret history of the planet, going back about 230,000 years. She was trained in the Celtic traditions from England and Ireland, the Druidic tradition, and also the goddess traditions in cultures all around the world. And so, of course, I became, over many years, trained in all of these traditions. And, you know, on the outside, I had a sort of straight Clark Kent life. I was a commercial advertising photographer, an art director in marketing, and a high creative. But in my personal life, I was meditating, I was working with spiritual teachers and masters, and I was integrating how these profound mystery school teachings all over the world were actually aspects or chapters of one huge worldwide network that had been set up by masters and sages and initiates in order to help the human race grow. And so, in truth, on the outside, it may look like the different religions are all different. But if you go into the inner teachings or the esoteric teachings, you discover that they become one.
Exactly.
And of course, the masters are not fighting about this. They're not going to war with each other. It's just people who are stuck in the exoteric or outer dogma that believes their religion is the best one. Each religion has its own beauty. But if you go to the heart of the Sufis or the heart of the Essenes, the Kabbalistic teachings for the Jews, the Gnostic Christians for the Cathar teachings or the Templar teachings of the Christians, you know, ultimately you find that at the innermost circles there is enormous wisdom and beauty in each one of these. But
right.
The outer, you know, churches or synagogues or temples or mosques or whatever want you to believe it's their way or, you know, the scimitar of the holy jihad. And that's that has nothing to do with wisdom or unity. That has to do with social, political, financial power and manipulation.
Right, power and control. I wanted to point out, too, that many of the illustrations throughout the book are done by Trisha herself, and the lovely sketches of the goddesses and other imagery, and that's a lovely part of the book too. Obviously, talented in that area. But you know, you have a lot of, you have sections on the Hebrew Bible and talking about there's a lot of feminine imagery there that's sort of kind of half hidden. For Sophia herself, you know, is goes all the way through the wisdom books like Proverbs and much of the Apocrypha, and we see it in Psalms as well, you know, that feminine aspect, and El Shaddai and is a feminine image, which we often translate as the Almighty, right? But it's really the great breast or the great mountain. So there's a lot of stuff that's, hidden, and I think it's the same, isn't it, with the Lost Gospels. You know, you talk about a lot in the book. There's hundreds of Gospels that never made it into the canon, and many of them are extremely mystical and extremely open to the feminine aspects of God. So there's a whole lot going on here that, like you said, more than just the control system of one little way of thinking. And I think this is part of our work, isn't it, is to broaden the horizons and see that, wow, you know, this universe is not about morality in the sense there's a right and the wrong. It's about expanding into generosity. You know, once you're in a generous-hearted place, you're going to do the right thing. You know, you don't have to be browbeaten by a punishing, harsh God. For me, that's what I love about the book too, that it's, you've brought out so much of the joy and the, possibility thinking, you know, that's enshrined in all these teachings. That life is for wonder and joy, and it's a great thing. You have to enter into a whole new realm of understanding if you embrace some of these ideas. Yes,
you're so right. As you say, when I first began to discover the goddess, I had no idea that it was any place in the Judeo-Christian teachings, and so I have a couple of chapters where I'm looking at the face of the goddess that was hidden and actually well known for a long time until about 2,500 years ago. And so I go through, you know, the Divine Father and Mother and Son and Daughter and how they were actually honored by the Jews long ago before the patriarchal branch kind of stamped out everybody else. And then, of course, we inherited that in Christianity. And then, of course, the Muslims also inherited that to a large degree. And so then, of course, we go back to the circle, but then I begin to think, well, gosh, you know, if Jesus was so wise and stuff, what did he have to say about it? And, of course, a lot of it has been taken out of the New Testament. So, as you know, I wrote the book about the lost years of Jesus, and that whole book was written because Jesus actually appeared to me in my office and asked me to write a book about his lost years and secret teachings. He said there has been enough war and bloodshed in my name. And I took it very seriously. I was actually in the middle of writing a whole other book, and I was very close to the end. And he was like, put that book aside. This is the book I want you to do, which, as you can imagine, it was a very big deal for me to, you know, just surrender and know that he certainly has to have had a higher perspective, and he had to know what he was asking me to do. And so
right.
I did. It took me 3 years to write that book, and it has it's an amazing book with about 100 illustrations as well, and it has about 1,200 footnotes and 100 pages of back matter. So I took that as a very serious assignment, but I had to pull about 200 pages on his secret teachings out of the book, and so they wound up in the Sophia book, where I take on the teachings that he addressed that most of us know nothing about, where he openly talked about the divine Abba, Amma, or Father, Mother God. He talked about the divine Son and Daughter. He said that he was the divine Son and that he and the divine Daughter come together. And he said, even as Mary Magdalene has come as my maid. He said, she is my mother, she is my wife, and she is my daughter. I am her husband, I am her father, and I am her son. So they come again and again into the world. And, of course, you know, we're so challenged down here. Many times we just kill them. And he says that they come again and again. And he actually says that he cannot return until the divine feminine is re-enthroned in the world.
Wow.
Now, that's a very serious statement.
Yeah,
the Gnostics actually believe that Mary Magdalene was the physical incarnation of the divine daughter, Sophia, the mother Sophia, and the daughter is the one who comes to earth. As with the Father and the Son, it's the Son that comes to earth or comes into the physical world. I'm sure not just this planet. But they actually collected 250 sayings that Mary Magdalene continued to teach after the crucifixion all through France and England. And they are beautiful, and they're totally supportive of what Jesus was teaching, and they're every bit as profound as what he was teaching. And
folks,
most people don't even know those sayings exist.
It sounds like another show, doesn't it, folks? We're already out of time. I can't believe it. It seems like we just got started. Get hold of this book. It's called Return of the Divine Sophia. It's published in the usual outlets, so you can get it anywhere. And you're going to have a fantastic journey. There's a lot of wisdom enshrined in it. I highly recommend it. And it's been a joy to entertain our wonderful guest here as well. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Tricia. Next week,
can you give them my website? Would that be okay?
Yeah. Let me tell you about next week, and you can give us that information. Unity Minister, Professor and Author Jim Gaither joins me, and he's going to discuss his new book. It's called The Hidden Realm of God, about Jesus as philosopher and healer. And okay, Tricia, if people want to get in touch with you,
Yeah, they can just go to my website. Is my name TricianMcCannon.com or TricianMcCannonSpeaks.com, and that's spelled T-R-I-C-I-A, like Patricia, but without the P-A, and then McCannon, just like it sounds, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N. So TricianMcCannonSpeaks.com or TricianMcCannon.com, and there you'll get to see, I've got about 13 online books and a lot of DVDs and books and so forth. So
Thank you so much
for having me on. What a total pleasure. I hope we can do it again.
Yeah, thank you, Tricia. Take care now, all right?
Yeah, you too. God bless, and to all of our listeners.
Yeah, and thanks for listening, guys. And we'll talk to you next week, all right? Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
If I were brave, I'd walk the razor's edge. Where fools and dreamers dare to tread and never lose faith.
How is life working for you? Would it be okay with you if life got easier, simpler, yet more meaningful and vibrant? Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesday afternoons for Vibrant Living. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to make your life more vibrant. Is there something in your life you'd like help with? A dream you'd like to achieve? A relationship you'd like to improve? Call into the show toll-free for Coaching with Carla. That's Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Central on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream?
Inspiration only takes a moment. Take a moment now to reflect on these words from Reverend Joan Gattuso. According to an ancient Hindu teaching, if you can only speak the truth and tell no lies, either minuscule or outrageous, for 12 consecutive years, you can attain enlightenment. A noble being will always tell the truth. Do you? Begin now with the first step of simply noticing if you do tell the truth immediately or if your first instinct is to alter the facts a bit. Resolve to be honest with yourself and others starting today. And after 4,383 days, you just may become enlightened.
This meditative moment is brought to you by Unity.
You know the saying, a good deed is its own reward? Well, moving toward a plant-based diet and vegan lifestyle is one kind and compassionate act that isn't just its own reward. It will also reward you with vibrant health, boundless energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, and according to yogis and Unity's co-founder Charles Fillmore, even give a boost to your spiritual life. On Main Street Vegan, the radio program named for the popular book, Victoria Moran will make your move in a vegan direction easy, fun, affordable, and delicious. With enticing topics and entertaining guests every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Time, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Our
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.